Compliance Clarified, a podcast by Thomson Reuters Regulatory Intelligence.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Compliance Clarified, a podcast for compliance and regulatory professionals from Regulatory Intelligence. I'm your host, Alexander Robson, Managing Editor in London, and for this podcast, we are discussing the COP29 summit, otherwise known as the Conference of the Parties, in Baku, Azerbaijan. Joining me today from New York is Henry Engler, Senior Editor. Good morning, Henry.
Morning, Alex.
So emerging market economies need at least $1 trillion a year to combat climate change. That is the goal of the annual climate summit. COP29, though, has been beset by problems this year, some of its own making, including the host eulogising oil and gas. But many national leaders have taken less interest in the annual climate gathering. US President Joe Biden decided to skip it, as did European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, French President Emmanuel Macron, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi, and China's President Xi Jinping, although Keir Starmer, the UK Prime Minister, was there. But Donald Trump's re-election and his commitment to roll back ESG regulation has prompted some industry wags to rename ESG as ever so gone. Before we talk about what Trump's election more generally means and its implications, let's discuss some of the highlights of this year's event, because there have been quite a few gains. Modest progress includes a deal on carbon markets, but heavy lifting is still ahead for finance for developing countries for the second week of the conference as this podcast goes live. Henry, what is in that agreement? What does it mean?
Well, first of all, Alex, congrats to your prime minister for bucking the trend of major Western leaders who couldn't be bothered with this conference. So good for him, and good for the UK. Yes, the conference, the primary goal has been to discuss financing for poorer countries affected by carbon emissions. And the estimates are that these countries will need at least $1 trillion or more per year to combat climate change. But that goal, as you suggest, seems a bit elusive right now, given the lack of top leadership. What we have seen in the first week of the conference are some small victories. One victory on, as you suggest, on carbon markets is important and could be substantial. And essentially, what we have in the world today is a situation where you have lots of voluntary carbon markets scattered across the globe. And these markets allow companies to sell and buy carbon credits. And what that means is, let's say you're a large multinational and you're struggling to meet your net zero goals, which you've told the world you'll reach by, say, 2030 or somewhere around there. And you want to purchase a credit to offset what your lack of progress. That credit, essentially, the money is supposed to go towards a project somewhere in the world that effectively reduces carbon emissions. Let's say it means planting more forests, or maybe it means engaging in some other kind of technology or renewable energy project. The trouble with that market so far, and many of these voluntary markets, is the credibility behind those credits. There's been a lot of evidence that what you're buying as a company may not actually come to pass. And so there's a lack of credibility. There's a lack of transparency. And the process in which those credits could be audited by an independent agency or third party is missing as well in a lot of these cases. So what the UN has done, the UN has actually been working on this UN-sponsored carbon market for some time. And last week, they went ahead and pushed ahead an agreement that would allow countries to trade credits on the UN carbon market, and would also allow businesses to also reduce their carbon emissions via carbon credits. And the hope is that because it's backed by the UN, that it would be a much larger marketplace, bringing in all sorts of countries and all sorts of businesses around the world. Because just to give you a small sample of what's going on currently with voluntary carbon markets, in 2023, only about 723 million of transactions took place on voluntary carbon markets across the world, which is really, it's a fraction of what you would really hope to achieve in order to combat climate change. And actually, that is like a 56% fall from the year before. So the step by the UN, some people have criticized it. Some say it's, you know, the standards that were approved are still subject to, you know, integrity issues. And but the UN, the supervisory group behind this decision said, look, we want to push forward. We'll talk about all the issues. We'll keep working to ensure that it meets the type of standards that everyone wants. And so the hope is, as I said, it will spur greater carbon market credit trading around the world.
And other than carbon trading, what other victories have there been this week?
So you had a few smaller decisions. One is on development bank financing. These are large development banks. They announced that they would increase funding for developing countries to tackle climate change, and the fund would be now $120 billion by 2030, which is a 60% rise from what was committed last year. You also had an agreement on what's called the Loss and Damage Fund. This is a fund which is, again, designed to help lower income countries respond to natural disasters, such as, you know, hurricanes, flooding, wildfires and such. And so formal agreements were signed that would allow the fund to begin receiving money, and money that could be then used to help NAT countries when they face such natural disasters.
Why are emerging markets seen as less attractive for private investors?
Well, there is when you compare these markets and economies to ones, say, in the developed world, such as United States, UK, Europe, where markets have well-established norms and rules and legal foundations. It's more difficult for private investors who are up against certain profit objectives, let's say, if they're running a fund, to feel as though that they could meet those obligations. You don't have the same kinds of guarantees that you would have in other markets, and so there's a sort of risk aversion, I guess is one way to put it, by investors to put money into projects in these emerging economies where there's more risk. I mean, I think that's the bottom line. They feel that there is more risk. And so for private investors to get involved, what they really want to see are governments get involved first. And then if the governments take on the lion's share of the investments that are needed, then they feel a greater sense of security or confidence that when they invest, then their investments will come to fruition. I think that that's largely the issue for many private investors.
From the war in Gaza.
There are a huge network of tunnels underneath. It looks like a spider web.
To the front lines in Ukraine.
Extraordinary how these people adjust and even laugh when you take cover.
No matter where the story is, Reuters World News Podcast is there. We bring you everything you need to know in 10 minutes, every weekday. I'm your host, Kim Vanell. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Lastly, the elephant in the room. What are the implications for ESG regulation with Donald Trump back in the White House?
Not good, in a word, two words. Mr. Trump has advertised his hostility towards efforts by the federal government to combat climate change. During his last term, he pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accords, and the expectation is that he will do so again. He has been, on the contrary, on the opposite side, very supportive of the oil and gas industries in this country, and has promised to increase oil and gas production. This at a time when the U.S. is producing and pumping more oil than it ever has. So any efforts by the federal government to take on climate issues are literally gone. I think most experts would agree. For example, the climate disclosure rules that were announced by the Securities and Exchange Commission earlier this year. Those are now caught up in the courts in a legal fight, but whoever Trump nominates to run the SEC is likely not to revive that piece of rulemaking. And so far, he hasn't announced his choice for the SEC, but he has announced his pick to lead the Environmental Protection Agency. And it's a former congressman from New York who, as far as we can see, has really next to zero experience on environmental issues. But he was chosen because Trump wants to really scale back that agency, and the gentleman who was chosen has agreed to do it. His name is Lee Zeldin. And so I think really what you're left with in the U.S. is a situation where individual states who are committed to combating climate change and providing more information for investors will have to do so on their own. And of course, we have California, which finalized their own climate disclosure rules. And so any company that operates in that state will have to abide by those rules. And there are many, California being one of the largest states. And certainly, if you compare by GDP, it could be its own country. So it's not all lost. And I think for many companies, from a compliance standpoint, if you operate in the U.S., you operate in California, you'll need to be prepared to report on scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions because you operate in California. And if you're a multinational and you operate in Europe, you'll have to abide by the CSRD climate disclosure rules as well. So what you will get at the end of the day under a Trump regime, I think, is just more of a fragmented regulatory landscape, where at the federal level here in the U.S., at least, you will not see rulemaking or regulations that require you to comply with climate emissions or decarbonization. But you will at certain states. And, for example, another state, New York, the governor of New York has just announced that she's going to push forward a regulation that would require people who drive into Manhattan to pay tolls, similar to what you have in London. It's been very controversial, but she's now finally agreed to move forward with that. So it's going to be a different environment for business, certainly, for ESG under the Trump administration.
In the UK, the government's made very clear that it wants to push ahead with net zero targets. There isn't as yet a commission in post in Brussels, although von der Leyen has been confirmed as the next commission's president. So we're not entirely sure what direction they'll take, but it'll be firmly opposed to that of the incoming US administration, you would think.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Interesting times. Well, thank you, Henry. That seems like an opportune moment to bring this podcast to a close. I'd like to thank Henry for sharing his insight today. And on behalf of us all, thank you to our audience for listening in. Please check the show notes for further reference. And for more coverage of these topics, go to the Regulatory Intelligence homepage. Goodbye.
Compliance Clarified, a podcast by Thomson Reuters Regulatory Intelligence.